Welcome to Beyond the Wish, where we delve into the power of wishes and the people who make them possible. Today's episode is going to be hosted by Dina Thatchett, who is our referral outreach manager. She works with all of our medical providers and hospitals to make sure that children are referred. Our guest today is Dr. Phil Thrush from Lurie Children's Hospital here in Chicago. We hope you enjoy this episode. And if you want to learn more about Make-A-Wish and our mission, you can visit wish.org/Illinois.
Welcome to episode 8 of Beyond the Wish. And today's topic is the medical impact of a wish. And with us today is Dr. Phil Thrush. So, Dr. Thrush, can you please introduce yourself and tell us your specialty and how you got involved with Make-A-Wish?
I'd love to. My name is Phil Thrush. Thank you for having me today. I am the medical director for the heart transplant program and the head of heart failure and heart transplant at Lurie Children's Hospital. I am a chapter medical advisor, and I've been involved with different levels of Make-A-Wish at the national level for many years. My involvement started back in 2013. Which makes me feel really old now. And I happened to be at the right place at the right time. I was approached by one of the other cardiologists at Lurie Children's as the cardiology eligibility guidelines were being revised. And he asked me to be part of that. And then that evolved into being part of the eligibility reform advisory group, which was the precursor to the National Medical Advisory Council. And so then I have served on the National Advisory Council for the, well, for 9 years, three terms, and just recently rolled off after those 9 years of service, but still serve as a chapter advisor and wherever I can help and fill in.
Absolutely. We appreciate it so much. Research shows that wishes can help give children renewed hope and strength in their fight against critical illness. In your view, how are wishes beneficial to children with these conditions?
The research is a big part of that. And it is a form of medicine that I can't prescribe to somebody. We know from the Israeli study and the study out of Nationwide Children's that a wish is beneficial not just in the moment. It's the things that lead up to the wish that help a child through the recovery process. And we know that it extends beyond the wish. So if you look at the research that's out there, particularly a new study from Nationwide, you know, they looked at children who received a wish and they compared them to children of similar ages, similar medical conditions, similar severity of disease, but didn't have a wish. And what they saw was those children who got wishes had less hospital utilization, less emergency medicine care. And then when you couple that with the data from the Israeli study, that those children had faster recoveries. Like, I think it really is a medicine. It's, you know, there's something beyond just the feel-good experience of going on a wish and going to go somewhere fun or do something fun or get something or meet somebody. It really is a part of that whole recovery process. And it's not just for the child. It's for the whole family. You know, when we see these kids, you know, after their wish, like, it isn't just the kid who had that experience. It is the whole family that got to experience. And I think it's helpful for the healing for all of them.
Right. Thank you so much for sharing about the research. Really, really, really important. In your experience, how have wishes positively impacted the children and families? And do you have any examples of that with some of your patients?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think there are, you know, personal experiences of my own patients. There's also, you know, great stories from some of the colleagues that I work with, and I'll share a couple of them. But we certainly see, you know, when a child is going through that process of the wish referral and like the build up to the wish, like there's that anticipation and that excitement. And, you know, it is a different clinic visit when we're talking about those things. It doesn't matter how bad things might be, like the kids light up when they talk about that. And then when they come back, seeing, like, you know, inevitably they show us pictures, which is awesome, of whatever that wish experience was. And it oftentimes the visit before and the visit after are two very different visits. And there is a sense of a different attitude and a different mindset after they've had that wish experience. It is not uncommon that when I see patients after their wish experience, some of those things that they've complained about seem to be better and symptoms are improved. And, you know, one of the anecdotal stories I love to tell is the story that the neurologist at Nationwide shared. You know, he had a patient who had really recalcitrant seizures and epilepsy and had been on multiple medications and different combinations of medications. And he said, you know, I felt like I didn't have anything else to offer them but this wish. And so, you know, they had the whole build up to this. And, you know, his patient goes on their wish. And his wish was to meet this NBA basketball player out in LA for the Clippers. And he goes and he has this amazing wish experience. And he came back and he had his appointment. And the family and the patient amazingly were like, you know, we haven't really had any seizures since we came back from our wish. And it's not like they changed things before going on this wish. Like, he was on the same medications before and the same medications after. And I get that. That is a really dramatic example of it. But to hear him talk about the experience with that, to hear that patient and that family talk about their experience and what it meant to them, and to have that kind of an outcome really does show that this can be a medicine for a lot of kids. And it's thankfully part of what inspired him to do this study and to look and say, you know, like, what really is the benefit of the wish? And so, you know, we all get to experience, whether it's an oncology patient, a cardiology patient, you know, a patient with epilepsy, what have you. But to see dramatic examples like that, I think, is a testament to what this organization means to not just the patients and the families, but the whole field of pediatrics and what they do.
Wow, thank you for sharing that story. What a very profound outcome for that child and that family. Amazing.
It is amazing.
Many doctors say they include wishes as part of the treatment plan. So why do you think wishes are essential for children with critical illnesses?
I think they're essential because for probably a handful of reasons. Like, one is kind of what you already alluded to. Like, it helps them in their recovery process, whatever it is, whether it's cancer, whether it's heart failure, whether it's a transplant. You know, we know from the data that their recovery is better. But I think another big piece of this is when you look what a patient and a family goes through with any of these, you know, life-changing diagnoses and medical journeys, this is a break for them, right? It's an opportunity for them not to think about, you know, the chemotherapy. It's an opportunity not to think about, you know, their next heart failure admission. It's an opportunity for them not to think about their next surgery, or what it is, whatever it may be for that patient, that family. It's an opportunity for them to just bask in the joy of being a kid and experiencing something amazing. And so, you know, it isn't just trying on the patient. It extends to the whole family. You know, we see that on a day-to-day basis. You know, it's time off of work for parents. It is parents trying to be parents in two different places. It's the effect on the siblings. But a wish is an opportunity for them to focus on them and the recovery and not the day-to-day illness. And I think that is super important. The other thing I'll say is, you know, now having done this for a really long time, one of the amazing things is it doesn't matter how small the wish seems. Make-A-Wish finds a way to make that wish amazing. And to find, you know, the one true wish for what that child wants and desires. And I think my favorite example of that is I had a patient when I was in Ohio whose wish was to go to Staples. And I get that that sounds like not an exciting wish at all, right? But his wish was to go to Staples. He loved Staples. And, you know, the wish referral process took a really long time. And they really went through lots of exploration of, like, is this his one true wish? And sure enough, it was. And, you know, he thought he was going to go to, you know, Staples locally. And they picked the family up in a limousine and they flew the family to Chicago. And, you know, he had a shopping spree at one of the Staples here and they shut the store down for a period of time. And then they did all these amazing things in Chicago and they came home. And first the mom was upset because they ended up with 7 easy buttons that were in every room of the house. But I think one of the most impactful things that she said was, this seemed like such a simple thing, but for us, it meant the world because we had a weekend where we didn't think about all the other things. It was an opportunity for us just to be a family and focus on being a family and having fun. And, you know, to this day, I still occasionally get emails from that family, and a lot of it focuses on memories from that trip. And so, you know, to me, I think that's a huge, like, benefit and focus is that, you know, it is that, you know, recovery for everyone.
Well, thank you for sharing, and especially the story about wishing for to go to Staples. You just never know what might come out of the child's mouth.
You never know.
What kind of feedback have you received from your patients and their families regarding how Make-A-Wish has affected their lives besides this family that emails periodically?
It's usually gratitude. You know, I think one of the things that I'm most proud of over, you know, my last 12 years of involvement with Make-A-Wish is really expanding the criteria of who qualifies for a wish and trying to get rid of that thought of, like, that Make-A-Wish is only for kids with cancer or Make-A-Wish is, you know, only for kids with a terminal illness. A lot of the work that we did early on with the Eligibility Reform Advisory Group was trying to maximize the number of kids that get a wish. And to me, one of the most exciting things to hear from families is not just the, like, the gratitude for, you know, being able to go on the wish and focus on time together as a family and that recovery, but the families who come back and say, I never knew this was something that our child could receive because of some of the misconceptions that exist about Make-A-Wish. And I think, you know, it's been a lot of work over the last decade to really push everything that Make-A-Wish does and you know, try to educate physicians and nurse practitioners and social workers and nurses and the community that Make-A-Wish really is so much more than what some of those preconceived notions are. And so to hear these families who are just so appreciative for something they never knew was an option for them, to me is huge. And I think the other part of it is, you know, in what I do, like, we have had children who come from all sorts of backgrounds, everything from professional athletes to single parents who are in homeless shelters. And one of the things that I talk about when I talk about Make-A-Wish, when we bring it up, is that Make-A-Wish has a way of making things special in a way that you can't necessarily do on your own. And so in my world, just like in with transplant, I say, you know, it takes a village, and it doesn't matter what your resources are. You need the people. You need our team. Make-A-Wish is kind of the same way, in all honesty. Like, yes, someone can take their child to Disney, but I would argue that that experience is probably a very different experience than a child who goes to Disney with Make-A-Wish. Anyone can take their child to Staples. The experience of going to Staples with Make-A-Wish is a very different experience. And I think that's part of what makes Make-A-Wish so special, is that it is such a unique experience. And it gets down to the root of, what is that child's one true wish? And how do we make it special for that child? It's not a cookie cutter thing, right? It isn't like you just load up the plane and go to Disney with everyone. It's special and unique for every kid and every family who goes on it. And to me, that's, you know, one of the things that is also amazing is I see these families back. You know, I've heard tens, if not hundreds of stories of going to Disney for Make-A-Wish, but they're all different, right? Like, every family has a different experience, and they all take something different away from that trip. Everything is so special for that kid. And I think that's one of the things that, to me, is awesome to hear. It's like, awesome, you went to Disney. Tell me about what you did. What was your favorite part? What was, like, the thing that you were looking forward to most? Like, what was unique about the trip for you? And so I get to hear all those details. And it's amazing how many different permutations there can be of something as simple as just going to Disney.
I love that you've focused on the essence of the wish, because, you know, tying it back to what you were talking about, the research and the studies that have come out, and, you know, that's where that correlation to healing happens. It's when we hit that essence of the wish, when we find out the why for that child and make that happen. So I really love that. And then, you know, also talking about the expansion of criteria. So the work that you did at the front end when I first met you, and how much I, you know, took from you to make sure that, especially in the, you know, cardiology space, to really, you know, identify which are the conditions that are eligible for a wish is so integral for not just our chapter, but for the enterprise. It's really made such a huge difference. And, you know, we've been able to reach so many more children and have yet more to reach. So I'm so grateful for all of that work that you did back then and continue to do.
I mean, I think that is, of all the things I've been able to be a part of, like, that is by far one of the things that I'm most thankful and most proud to have been a part of with Make-A-Wish, because it's, you know, it's awesome to sit in that room. Just anecdotally to tell a story, like, when I started, I was right out of training, right? So, like, I'm a first-year cardiologist. I sat in a room with a neurologist, a pulmonologist, a couple of oncologists, gastroenterologist, and probably a couple other people. And I bet those seven other people cumulatively had 150 years worth of experience. And I remember sitting there thinking, I'm like, oh my God, like, I'm a fish out of water. But it was so interesting to sit in that group and, like, everybody's opinion was valued, and everyone came together to say, you know what, like, we can do better from an eligibility standpoint, and to work through all those things, and just to think how many more kids have, you know, gotten wishes because of things that we helped develop and put together, I think is truly awesome.
It is. Totally agree. Tremendous.
Right place grateful. At the right time.
Absolutely. So if you could expand a little bit on the work that you did in the reform group on how the eligibility criteria have been determined for the enterprise.
Yeah, so the eligibility reform advisory group, when it initially got put together, the goal was to include subspecialists from different subspecialties within pediatrics that refer to Make-A-Wish, and to use their expertise to kind of more broadly define who should get a wish, and to really kind of evolve the definition of what that meant. And so That initial group then met every 3 to 6 months. Initially, it was earlier on. And we essentially took the existing subspecialty eligibility documents and we went through them one at a time. And the goal was to, A, have some consistency across the different subspecialties. So kind of as an example, transplant's a really good example of that, where thoracic transplant qualified indefinitely after their transplant, but things like kidney or liver maybe only qualified for a year post-transplant. And some of the rationale behind kind of changing those things was, well, the risks that come with those medications and the lifelong potential complications, those risks don't always go away, right? And so trying to create some uniformity across those things, but then to look and really say, like, are there conditions that aren't well represented, that pose a significant disease burden or a limitation on life expectancy or what have you, that aren't included but should be? And are there things on there that we need to clarify better? And so we tried to move from having a specific diagnosis criteria to evolving that to say, well, a lot of conditions are a spectrum, right? Like some things, like, you know, a patient with disease A or syndrome A and another patient with that could have very different courses. And so trying to then incorporate some degree of disease burden into some of those decision-making. And I think, you know, this is a double-edged sword. Like, the ultimate goal is to qualify as many children for wishes as possible, but you also have to do it in a way that doesn't make this so burdensome that you that your staff can't, like, sort through it, right? And so I think, you know, part of the way this evolved, it happened at a great time because some of this was also the transition from then, you know, paper referrals to then a web-based referral system and being able to build out some questions that, yes, some things will still automatically qualify from a diagnosis, but can we build it in such a way that, you know, some of these conditions maybe qualify because of X, Y, or Z thing in addition to it. And the great part of that was, you know, while each kind of subspecialty discussion got led by the person that was there, having then not just the experience of the rest of us within pediatrics, but also being involved with Make-A-Wish to then kind of shine that lens on it, I think was really helpful to work through it. And it surprisingly, maybe not surprisingly, was an incredibly time-intensive process. And, you know, the beauty of that then was that group then evolved into the National Medical Advisory Council, which was a kind of a much more formal organization that then kind of it evolved to focus on other things like travel considerations that really, I don't know that had always been taken into consideration, but things like who's safe to fly and who's not. Because I think deep down inside, like, all of us want the best thing for our patients. Like, you know, you get a form, well, now you get an email, but you get a wish verification. You're like, yeah, I want my patient to go fly to Disney. And you look at some of the things on the list, and you're like, oh, I don't know if that's the safest thing in the world to do. But you want to say yes, right? So, like, I think back to our early days, like, we met with, like, people from the FAA and, like, medical transport companies to, like, kind of work through, like, let's actually put together guidelines for safe travel too, right? Like, we want this wish to be good, but we also want it to be a good experience and a safe experience. And so, you know, that early work then kind of evolved into this bigger role within Make-A-Wish. And the nice thing is, you know, we're now 10, 11 years into the National Advisory Council, and you know, they, now that I've rolled off, still meet a couple times a year, and usually one of those is in association with the big annual meeting. But part of that process now is to continually look at those eligibility guidelines. Like, are those things still pertinent? Do those things need to be revised? Like, are there things that have come up? And I think, you know, it also serves as a great resource for wishes when they get escalated up the chain, where it's not clear, right? Like, is this patient eligible for a wish or not? And so having this board to be able to also say, or to serve as a resource for the people who are taking in the wish, I think is helpful. But it also informs, like, oh, maybe we didn't think of that, right? Like, I think all these people have the best interests at heart, but there are certainly lots of rare and uncommon diseases that, you know, don't necessarily spring to mind when you're looking at a sheet of like 10 conditions or 15 conditions, that then going through this process of like wish review, maybe we do need to revise these things. So that is, I think, one of the nice things, that these are now, you know, living, breathing documents that don't have to rely on local chapters to constantly update. It can be done at the national level. They're periodically reviewed and they evolve, right? And so I think that is a really crucial part of this for the local chapters to help provide guidance to them. Some chapters are really lucky, have lots of chapter medical advisors, and some don't. So I think the work that the National Advisory Council does is actually really important, kind of is Make-A-Wish continues in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing all of that. And I mean, I can speak firsthand for the fact that the revised eligibility criteria and guidance, as well as the travel safety component, has just been so transformative in terms of our ability to not only, you know, extend our reach to children with eligible conditions, but to do so in a safe manner. You know, we think back to the time prior to having that travel safety, and we cringe at, you know, like we may have been taking chances that we shouldn't have. So we're really grateful to you and everyone that's been part of that work and that ongoing effort.
You know, the other thing I would add to it, though, too, is like, I think of who sat in that room, you know, 13 years ago, 12 years ago, and who was part of those initial conversations and who was represented. And I think to what my last meeting with the Medical Advisory Council was like a year or two ago. And we have been super lucky with the people who have wanted to be involved, having specialists with genetics and rare disease backgrounds be involved. But also, you know, the makeup of that group is so diverse now, not just from across the country, but, you know, general pediatricians, gastroenterologists, nephrologists, geneticists. We've had palliatists be part of that, cardiology, oncology, rheumatology. Like, the fact that there's now input from really just about every subspecialty into those documents is, to me, really crucial. You know, I think back to when we sat in a room and, you know, it's, you know, two oncologists, a neurologist, you know, a cardiologist, a general pediatrician looking at the rheumatology criteria, and we're like, yeah, no, this all seems reasonable. Like it's really crucial to have those representatives be part of the conversation to make sure that we really are reaching every child who is eligible for a wish. Because it's one of those things, like, you don't know what you don't know. And so to see that group evolve, and to know that Make-A-Wish now has this really robust group of pediatricians that kind of spans everything to weigh in. I recognize it's never going to be perfect, and there's going to be times where maybe not everything is perfectly represented. But it has evolved so much from where it started that I think it's a true testament to what Make-A-Wish's commitment has been to that, and really to the goal of trying to reach every child.
Right. And truly bringing that that medical impact and that impact on healing to all of the other specialties, and, you know, children that have a rheumatology diagnosis or cardiology or what have you that we weren't as good at in the past. So it's just been really crucial, and we're so grateful for all of that help. How does it feel to see a light of joy return to your patients once they have started their wish journeys or completed their wish journeys?
It is right behind getting to tell patients they're getting a new heart. It is, I don't think there's anything like it. There's nothing like knowing what a child has gone through and seeing them through the really bad times and the really down times, and then seeing them after the wish. And I think, you know, my experience is maybe a little bit different because almost all of my patients, at least my transplant patients, choose to do their wish after their transplant. So, you know, on one hand, I think that gives them something to look forward to. But I've then gotten to see them go through that really challenging time, you know, whether it's with a ventricular assist device, months of sitting in the hospital, the really hard recovery after a transplant. You know, it's like seeing a normal happy kid on the back end who's really excited to tell you about that thing that they got to do. Not tell you about, you know, their palpitations, not tell you about like the VAT alarms that they had, not about, you know, the fact that they've, you know, been sitting in the hospital for 6 months. They're just excited to tell you about normal kid things. Normal kid things that normal kids should be excited about. And it's just joy, right? And I think that's why all of us went into pediatrics is, you know, we want kids to be happy and have joy. And I think that's what we get on the back end of a wish is you get to see that joy. You get to see that relief, not just from the kid, but from the parents. And I mean, it, like I said, it is like their favorite thing to do is to show us all the pictures of the things that they did on their wish. And so, you know, it is arguably the highlight of my clinic day when I get to have those clinic visits.
Wow. I mean, the simplicity of return to normalcy, right? Like they get to be a child.
Yes.
So how profound one wish could be for these children. So
it is. And I think that's, you know, it's the profoundness and the simplicity of it is it in a lot of ways, it is a break and a return to normalcy and the joy that comes with that.
So then expand a little bit more on how referring a child and seeing a child go through a wish journey impacts you as the provider.
I think it is just as fulfilling for us as it is for the kid and the family. You know, I think all of us who refer kids to Make-A-Wish, to some extent, have really difficult jobs, right? Like, purely by the nature of the kids we are referring to Make-A-Wish, like, we have difficult parts of our job. And whether that is because of the complexity and the chronicity, sometimes the morbidity and mortality of what we do, like, it's hard. Mm-hmm. And we all need those things that fill our cup, and they can be lots of different things. But this is one of them. I think, you know, it is like I'm excited when I go to clinic and I know I'm seeing patients who have been on their wish and I'm going to spend, you know, probably more time than I should and hearing about those things. Mm-hmm. But like those are things that we need too. Like it can be a really hard job. And so at the end of the day, like, we want to hear the good things just like they got to experience it. So I get to live vicariously through them and see those things. And it isn't just me. Like, it's the nurses, it's the social workers, it's, you know, the child life specialists, it's the staff that, you know, everyone is excited to hear about the wish journey when they come back. And, you know, for me, it's somewhat a little unique because I've maybe a little more insight into the process than some of the rest of my staff. So like, I know when they're in the process, I get to ask them like, hey, where are we in that process? Like, what kind of little things have your wish granters done as we're getting towards the big wish? And to kind of help feed some of that excitement as they're kind of going into it. But no, I think it's, you know, it is for the staff, it's the feel good part of it. Like, you know, I can't point you to any research studies that, like I can with the kids, but for the staff, 100%, I think it's the feel-good part of it, that it is something that gives us that joy and that spark to make sure, yes, we're referring the next kid. And that's why it's, like, for us, at least within the heart failure and the cardiology group, it's part of our regular documentation in clinic for certain populations. Like, have they had their wish? Mm-hmm. Yes, no. And even if yes, like, what was it? Like, it's sometimes good to come back to that too and kind of relive some of those things is even as you get further out from it.
Just hearing you talk about that, I mean, it really is, we're so grateful for the passion that you and your colleagues have for making sure the children are referred, because in order for us to fulfill the mission, we need all of you and effort that all of you make to identify the children and then to keep them engaged, because that really, again, you know, tying it back to that impact and the entire wish journey, it's everybody, it's all the wish makers that are involved in some way, shape, or form, small or large, that matter and that make the wish that much more impactful for the child and for the family. And I'm going to share a little something here. Dr. Thrush actually enjoys making his own referrals when he has the time to. And I asked him why years ago, and he told me it's because he has to, you know, give a lot of not so great information or negative information, or, you know, talk about the hard things all the time. And, you know, he loves getting to do something on the more positive end to give that sense of control to a child and family that has just received some not so great information, but has this additional thing that they can focus on. And sometimes, I think your words were, sometimes it's all you have left to give that isn't on that negative side. So really grateful for that. What would you like to say to other providers that are treating patients with eligible conditions who are not actively referring as of this moment?
I would say to any providers that are subspecialty providers, it never hurts to go to the Make-A-Wish website and look at the referral documents for your subspecialty. Like I said earlier, you don't know what you don't know. And sometimes you don't know what does qualify. And I think the thing I hear over and over is people are sometimes surprised about what conditions qualify a child for a wish. And so I think, you know, the first part of that is like educating yourself about what difference can I make. And the first part of that is knowing like, are there patients that I'm not sending that I should be sending, right? The other thing I would say is, like, if you're ever in doubt, I think it's okay to be really honest with the family and say, I get that this has been really hard. It is not clear to me whether or not you do or don't qualify for a wish, but either A, I'm happy to reach out and talk to the chapter, or I'm happy to make a referral and see where it goes. And I think at least setting it up for the family so it's not necessarily a definitive, like, expectation when it's unclear. but you know, I think a lot of things can go into that referral. And I think there is, as great as we tried to make the referral guidelines, like, they're not comprehensive and they don't encompass everyone. And I think there are a lot of kids who, because of their medical complexity, probably do warrant a wish, but maybe don't meet a strict criteria. And so it never hurts to reach out and talk. And I think, you know, the nice thing, you know, especially here in Illinois, is that the chapter has a fair number of medical advisors that can, you know, at least talk to you and help gauge, is that appropriate or not? The other ask I would say is, like, when you do make a referral, like, sometimes there are questions either from the chapter or from a medical advisor, and know that our goal is always to want to say yes to kids who are eligible. But sometimes there's just, you know, there's only so much information you can put in a form. And it is oftentimes impossible to capture the complexity in a form. And so it is not uncommon for the chapter or a medical advisor to reach out. But we're doing that with the goal of, like, we hope that there is, you know, more to the story that we just can't fully understand. We want to get that story. And that's the purpose for the call. And so, you know, when someone reaches out to chat about your referral, like, know that's coming from a good place. Not that we're looking to say no. We're just trying to understand this patient better to make the best decision. And I think sometimes a no isn't an indefinite no either, right? Like, sometimes it is it doesn't seem like they meet a criteria right now, But these are the things that if they develop would change that decision. And so, you know, I think having a healthy dialogue can be really helpful. And I think the more you do refer, the better sense you get of things, who should qualify. And at the end of the day, it's a good thing for you and your patients, right? I think, you know, I spend a lot of my days, plural, dealing with silly insurance denials and things like that. And so I know I'm not unique in that. I know we all deal with those things. And so this is a way to add some joy into what you do and know that your patients are going to have an amazing experience from it.
Thank you for sharing all of that. And I would say, in addition to what Dr. Thrust just shared, and besides cloning him, I would say to providers that reach out, and we can always come in and do a presentation. We can always, you know, talk through case, you know, we can do case studies and talk through, like, these are ones that, you know, this is why the condition qualified, and then talk through some of the ones that maybe were deemed to be ineligible and talk through that too, because it's equally important to understand, well, you know, this child had a lot going on, and why was it deemed to be ineligible? So we're, as a staff, we're happy to do that. We're happy to talk through operationalizing. You know, we understand, you know, Dr. Thrust just shared a lot about bandwidth and having a million and 10 things to do in your job role, working with these children and families, and anything that we can do to simplify and operationalize the process, we're happy to do so. And then identifying a champion within the team or group of champions that maybe have the bandwidth or collective bandwidth to identify the children and submit the referrals. You know, anything that we can do as a staff to support the providers in order to extend our reach to the children, we're happy to do so and happy to talk through what that might look like.
And I can't say enough how helpful it is when you guys have come, because I get that I'm one person, I have a pretty good understanding of things, but the number of nurses, social workers, MAs, child life specialists, like that benefit from that education, I think is crucial, right? Like, I get that most providers, like, making that Make-A-Wish referral is not at the top of their, like, to-do in clinic. But I think educating your staff and what the chapter is able to do when they come in and meet with different divisions, I think is really important and really helps with the education and spreading that word of, like, trying to make sure we are reaching all the children that we can.
What would you like to say to the volunteers and donors who help make wishes come true?
First, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We obviously can't do this without any of you. And some volunteers and donors are really big and some are really small, and it doesn't matter. Any amount of donation or time is critical to what Make-A-Wish does and can't happen without those things. You know, especially for, you know, the volunteers and wish granters, you are the ones who make this special. You are the one who helps drive down to what that child's one true wish is. And you're the one that gives that child that joy or helps them achieve that joy and gives the family that break from whatever it is they're going through. And you're the one who helps build the journey, right? It isn't just the wish itself. It's everything that leads up to it, including that wish. And you guys are what make things special, right? The Staples example is a perfect example, right? It'd be really easy for someone to be like, right, we're going on a shopping spree at Staples down the street. Like, but for someone to come up with the creativity of being like, hey, we're going to send them to Chicago and we're going to shut down Staples for an hour and let this family buy 7 easy buttons. Okay. Like, right? Like, it's that type of creativity that makes it unique and enables me to say things like, they find a way to make the wish special, no matter how small the wish is. And it's a testament to the volunteers and the donors who are involved with Make-A-Wish.
I will wrap this up by saying, because of providers like you, Dr. Thrush, as well as all of your colleagues, those we've worked with and those we have yet to work with, Being wish makers enables us to fulfill this incredible mission, and we are eternally grateful for that. It is because of you that there is more hope, joy, resilience, and strength in this world for these children and families that often, you know, have lost, you know, all of that in this journey, this medical journey of theirs. And because of all of you, the work and effort, the impact of these wishes on these children and families is immense. And so I will wrap this up with just thanking you and everyone that has ever referred a child and will in the future. So thank you so much for being here today and for sharing your infinite wisdom on all things Make-A-Wish.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Beyond the Wish. If we've inspired you to get involved, you can visit wish.org/Illinois to learn how you can make a difference for children in your community. Until next time, best wishes.